Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Blog Talk Radio show of Persimony, the blog of smart tips for smart women business owners. My name is Jean Grunert. This used to be the Seven Oaks Consulting Business Show, but that's kind of boring, and we rebranded as Persimony. And if you head on over to our website of persimony.com, you'll find tons of great tips for business women. We want to empower women business owners to really take their businesses to the next level and thrive in this world. And so we offer tips for everything from marketing, management, operations, finance, and everything in between. I'm really glad to be with you here today. Today we have a very special guest, and I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about myself and the show, but I want to get right to our conversation. Joining me here today is Erin Jordan. Erin is with Walker Sands Communications, and I'm going to let Erin introduce herself. Hey, Erin, how you doing?
Hi, great. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I am a senior account director here at Walker Sands Communications and author of our annual Future of Retail report. So, you know, we've worked with dozens of commerce companies throughout the years. And so, you know, we really use this report to take an annual look at, you know, what's happening in the space from, you know, the consumer perspective and what do we view as, you know, some of the major shifts occurring in retail and commerce. So we're excited to talk to you about it today.
I'm really glad that you're here with us today, Erin. I really like the report. And my background, just so our listeners know, most of you guys listening to the show know me from my background in publishing and marketing communications and marketing agencies. But way, way back in my career, I had worked at Macy's and Federated Department Stores for a while, and then I worked in Garden Center retail for a long time. And I had my own e-commerce business online selling equine art, horse-related art for artists for a long time. And so retail's always been very near and dear to my heart. And now the technology companies that I work with as a consultant, often we're talking to them about their supply chains, and some of them are doing retail, some of them are doing B2B, some B2C, but a lot of them are selling online. And so the Future of Retail report that I received from Walker Sands Communications had a lot of really interesting insights in it. And I get a lot of these reports, and I know a lot of companies put them out. And this one really stood out for me for its insights. And so I invited Erin onto the show today to talk to our listeners a little bit about some of those insights. And, you know, one of the things that struck me from the report was, you know, some of these, like, major news outlets all the time, you hear retail is dead, and, you know, Toys R Us was, like, the big news, and, oh, my God, that was a venerable brand, and it's mm-hmm. being closed down and stuff like that. But retail's not dead. I mean, what did you see from your research and from working on the report, Erin, when it came to the future of retail?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, thank you so much for the kind words about the report. I think, you know, what we're really seeing in this space is exactly to your point. You know, it's not dead. It's just changing quite a bit. And this year, I think the big takeaway is that there's just so many different factors outside of the retail landscape, you know, itself impacting the way that consumers are shopping. So, you know, to your point, that everything from, you know, the front end of that purchase, you know, whether it be on a website or in store with a little bit of a different experience to, you know, the back end in the supply chain, you know, consumer perspectives are really changing on what they expect from brands and retailers during the sales process. And, you know, that's stemming from everything from, you know, a more connected consumer landscape. You know, our research found that, you know, 72% of consumers under the age of 36 own some kind of connected home device. So that's categorized as, you know, anything other than a smartphone that's really helping them, you know, connect a little bit better to the world around them. You know, we also found that, you know, some of the more traditional aspects of the home, like cable, are continuing to decline. And while, you know, those pieces may seem a little bit separate, I think it really speaks to some of the shifts occurring in the traditional landscape of retail. You know, we did see, you know, other things that were impacting the consumer landscape. For example, voices also on the rise. So, you know, last year we started to see consumers owning and operating these devices. But this year our report found that, you know, one in four consumers actually own this device. And then what was more, you know, about of those who owned a device, you know, 39% owned at least two devices within their home. So, you know, that's also changing the way that consumers are interacting with brands. It really, you know, hasn't taken off quite yet, but I think, you know, we certainly expect that within the next couple years, as that becomes a more comfortable opportunity for consumers to connect with brands, we'll see, you know, kind of a surge in that as well. You know, and then similarly, you know, we're seeing everything from, you know, the political landscape to some of the other shifts and expectations in free and fast shipping impacting just kind of what consumers expect from brands and retailers today. So it's changed quite a bit. And I think, you know, just one last thing I would add to kind of the present state and the expected future state of the landscape is, you know, I don't think that in-store retail is dying as much as, you know, people think it is. It's really just the stores that haven't been able to change as much as a result of the current state of the retail landscape. So, you know, what we're seeing a lot more of are investments in, you know, for example, Nordstrom just announced investments in, you know, merchandise-free stores that really focus on providing a better customer experience. We're seeing, you know, even Amazon's investment into some of the in-store brick-and-mortar kind of represents what I believe will be the next big wave of in-store retail. So it's definitely not dying. It's just, you know, really changing what those interactions look like and thinking about the fact that, you know, customers and consumers just have so much more impacting their lifestyles than they ever have before.
Yeah, and the term that you used in the report was connected lifestyles. And I know from doing the research that the Pew Center for Technology and Social Media Research and stuff, their figures right now are saying that like 95% of all Americans own a smartphone, and a considerable number of that, very close to the same, likes to shop on their smartphone. But I was surprised about the connected lifestyle. Surprised yet not surprised. I know the demographic below mine, I'm a Generation Xer, you know, and I know that the millennials love their connectivity and they're always connected. And it's just part of their life experience that no matter where they go, their device can give them information about products. They can stand in Lowe's and scan something and see details about the products and things like that. Tell me a little bit more about all these devices that people are using in their homes and how is that connecting into the retail chain?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you make a really great point. I mean, it's the always-on nature of the connected consumer. You know, we started to see that a little bit last year. And that really grew this year as you just saw more and more consumers kind of adopting everything from, you know, smartwatches to voice-controlled devices to, you know, controlling their heating and their lighting via, you know, in-home devices. You know, and I think the interesting thing about that is also that, you know, it's not only the younger consumers we're seeing this with. You know, we did have some of the other generations have an interest, you know, while it's a little bit lower. I think an important part to note for, you know, brands and retailers and, you know, everybody thinking about what that future of interactions looks like is there are opportunities. They just look a little bit different. You know, I think we're seeing, you know, people across the board start to adopt things like, you know, Alexa control the lights. And, you know, the other part of that is really just, you know, how consumers are using these devices to shop across channels. You know, I think we've saw this year quite an increase just in terms of how people are shopping, even on social media. I think that's something that the younger generation has certainly started doing a little bit differently, you know, over the past couple of years.
It kind of feels normal even to somebody in my generation, because it's like shopping online. You see an ad pop up and it's like, it's a nice jacket or shirt or whatever that you want to buy. And you're like, oh, okay. And you click it and it's the same as in the early days of the internet when you had all the banner ads everywhere and you're like, oh, okay. You know, and so it feels like part of that experience. I was just giggling when you were talking about the voice activated stuff though, because I have never had good luck with voice activated devices. I think my New York accent, I mean, it can't understand whatever I say. And it's funny because I live in the South now. I'm originally from New York, but I mean, the Southerners, same thing. I know the technology is getting better all the time, but I feel like we're still kind of far away from being like, Alexa, buy me a new you know, rolling pin or a keyboard for my computer or something. Is that technology improving to the point where you think that someday we're going to be sitting in our living rooms and thinking, well, you know, I really need a new barbecue grill. Hey, Alexa, pull up the top 10 ones and then buy me one, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's really funny that you mentioned that specific example, because we actually, you know, I was in Seattle a couple of months ago and I spoke with somebody who, you know, works on the Amazon, you know, voice in the Amazon voice group. And that's something that she specifically mentioned is, you know, I foresee a day when we're going to order a grill. You know, she had told me she had just ordered a new grill on Amazon. And she said, I foresee a day when, you know, people would be that comfortable to order that. Now, you know, I do think that we're pretty far off from that, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of barriers that we need to overcome, right, before that's going to be something that's optional.
Well,
but I will say, you know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I wrote an article a few weeks ago for the website Medium about trying to shop for a refrigerator. And my husband told me, he said, you know what, if Amazon ever gets to the point where they can deliver a refrigerator, we're going to order from them. Because the in-person retail experience of shopping for a refrigerator was so antiquated. We spent 4 hours at one big box store talking to the guy there. And at the end of the day, we had picked out what we wanted. We knew what color we wanted. They wouldn't ship it to our rural location because we're 1 mile beyond the border of where their shipping service ends. It was insane.
Yeah.
And it was so different from what we expected. And that sort of segues me into another part of the report. There was such talk of Amazon and Walmart in that report. And I started thinking about that in terms of my bad experience. And it wasn't bad. I mean, the store personnel were great. You know, they were really helpful. But they couldn't overcome the blocks in their stupid online ordering system. And I'm like, what is this, 1999? You know, come on, guys. Everybody and his brother can ship anything now. Look at Amazon. And it struck me from your report, from the Walker Sands report, that Amazon has really changed the bar of expectations for consumers.
Yeah.
Because I don't know anybody who doesn't shop on Amazon. We just ordered this week from Amazon. Everybody I know has you know, orders at least books, if not everything else from them. And it's become a go-to place. I mean, we needed a specialty light for our kitchen for the range hood. Couldn't find it any hardware store. Couldn't find it any big box store. Found it on Amazon, 1, 2, 3. So tell me a little about what your findings were about that, because I dubbed the Amazon effect now, and it seems like that was coming out in your report, that that's changed consumer expectations. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
I think that's fairly common. You know, I think first and foremost, consumers are starting to be trained that Amazon is the place that they can find these things. But really, I think the biggest influence Amazon has had is on fast and free shipping. So, you know, for the fifth year in a row, our report found that that was the number one, you know, key driver for online and, you know, cross-channel purchases. So I think, you know, one of the biggest opportunities for brands and retailers with that in mind is really in the supply chain. You know, it was interesting to take a closer look at, you know, how consumers are looking to Amazon a little bit more closely. You know, a fourth of consumers actually said that they have purchased a product through Amazon because it was faster and less expensive. But 15% of consumers actually said that they had purchased through Amazon because of the shipping options, that they had faster shipping options, even if they had to pay more for it. So I think that, you know, one clear indication from the report is not only the fact that, you know, Amazon is really driving a lot of these expectations for consumers, but, you know, they're really willing to actually pay more if they can get the right experience. And so I think that's, again, where experience is starting to shine through. And Amazon has really been able to demonstrate that it can do it right, and people trust that. So I think that's been, you know, one of the biggest changes in the way, you know, it used to be kind of free and fast shipping was a nice to have, and now it's really just, you know, an expectation. And I would even say fast shipping more than free at this point.
Yeah, and I think for our listeners who own really small micro businesses, even home-based businesses, Etsy businesses, things like that, you often struggle at being somebody who did own a home-based retail business when we were doing the online art sales. You struggle with it because you think to yourself, how am I supposed to compete with an Amazon, right? Amazon's got freaking robots running around their warehouse scanning barcodes. They've got all this technology.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about drones. They're not doing it quite well yet, but they're talking about all sorts of shipping
things.
And you sit in your home office and you think to yourself, how am I supposed to compete with that? But, you know, there are a lot of good options for shipping. I mean, the U.S. Postal Service gets beaten up a lot, but they do offer two-day shipping. And for our small business owners at home, if you're trying to ship out quickly, you've got U.S. Postal Service, which you can set up an account online, order the shipping labels, print them at home, and get it out the door and get it into your customers' hands within 2 days. And if you have to get something out overnight, you can, although it is expensive. But, you know, there are options for delivery. And with a little creative problem solving, you can maybe not compete on the Amazon level, but in your niche, you can provide equivalent service, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. The other thing that I would add just from our findings from the report is that, you know, more than two-thirds of consumers said that they would be open to trusting third-party delivery services from, you know, brands and retailers. And so I think that there are a lot of opportunities for partnerships and taking, you know, a closer look at what distribution capabilities could be offered through, you know, other partnerships. And then something
drop
else
shipping,
there as well.
Maybe.
Yeah, drop shipping is a great example of the way that people, you know, have been able to do this. And I think another thing to note is that I think, you know, local retailers and brands in particular should really take pride in that, because one of the, you know, findings that we've been seeing a little bit more over the past several years are, you know, last year we started to see a little bit more, especially consumers in that, you know, 26 through 35 age range that, you know, have a little bit more of that money to spend but aren't, you know, necessarily, they're still kind of in that younger mindset, willing to try new things. I think, you know, they're a lot more focused on niche brands and retailers. They're a little bit more likely to purchase with someone who's just doing something really well as opposed to being as drawn to some of those big box retailers. And then this year, you know, our report found that people are paying a little bit more attention to brand sustainability and what the brand is doing for kind of that local environment. And so, you know, I think really owning that and, you know, certainly finding ways to, you know, have some of those distribution capabilities is really important. But I would say as we see this shift, I think the pendulum is starting to swing really back to some of those more locally owned and smaller brands and retailers that are able to provide that experience and differentiate themselves a little bit.
I found interesting in your report, there's a chart on page 22 which says, which of the following have you done in the past year? And one of them, the first one came up, it's not the top response, it just happens to be at the top of the list, was purchased a product online but picked it up in a store. And I thought, wow, what a great opportunity for a retailer. Because like Walmart, I do that all the time because they'll ship it free to my local store, and I do my grocery shopping there on Sunday. So I can order anything pretty much online and then pick it up in the store. And yet in the pickup area at that Walmart, it's very bare bones. It's a long wait and things like that. And I was just thinking to myself, you know, if you maximize that experience around the pickup area, it's almost like when you're checking out through an e-commerce site and screens will pop up saying, hi, you bought that shirt. Would you like a pair of pants with that? Or we're having we see you bought, you know, a pair of socks. We're having, you know, a sale on socks or something like that. There are just so many opportunities, I think, for maximizing the connections between the online world and the physical retail space that we're starting to see now. But I think a lot of people are still viewing them as entirely separate entities. Talk to me a little about any of the findings that you may have come across related to that issue.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you took the words right out of my mouth. The first thing I was going to say is that I think for too long, everybody thought, you know, it's online or it's in-store. And really, especially with that rise of the connected consumer that we just talked about, people don't expect that it's going to be any different. So, you know, people are, you know, doing everything from browsing across channels and then making a purchase on a different channel to, you know, doing things like purchasing online but picking up in store. You know, I think a good example of that is, you know, we did a little bit of research just surrounding the different ways in which people were using different channels. And we actually found that, you know, when you're looking at one channel versus the other, you're doing things a little bit differently. You know, so for example, people were using mobile devices, you know, more likely to do some of that browsing, and then they were more likely to actually make a purchase, you know, on the computer. And I think exactly to your point, the rise of some of those different channels in terms of, you know, better imagery and being able to better connect with consumers has really made a difference. You know, I will not I won't lie, I've started to see, you know, a lot more images pop up on Instagram, which has definitely led me to look into brands that I haven't in the past.
Yeah, but then, too.
You know, you get those ads. Yeah, you get those ads when you're on the computer, and it's, you know, it's a little bit creepy, but it's definitely driving awareness in a way that I don't know has been the case before. But so much of that is also on the brand, so, you know, provide a little bit more of that brand consistency today. And I think it's consumer satisfaction really, you know, comes from being able to connect some of those. And I think the thing that most comes to mind in terms of some of our research when you talk about, you know, online and in-store is really transparency, too, in the shipping process. I think as more brands move to do some of the shipping, you know, not only, you know, from a back-end perspective when it comes to, you know, how am I going to distribute this, how am I going to, you know, manage some of this inventory, but also, you know, the way that they're communicating that to their customers. For example, you know, only 30% of consumers were rating retailers' communication about their status of their online order excellent. And, you know, when we looked at Amazon, that was a little bit higher at 42%. So I think, you know, just being able to connect those channels and connect that experience for consumers is really going to drive it to the next level. I was actually at in Austin a couple weeks ago, and one thing that really caught my mind as I was, you know, walking around with some girlfriends of mine, and we saw ModCloth's, you know, in-store experience.
Oh, yeah.
And we went in there, and, yeah, they were telling us, you know, we really think this is the future of retail, and it was interesting to me because they only had a couple of pieces. You know, they have one size for everything, and you could try that on, and then they would allow you to completely waive that shipping cost to send it directly to your door, but you didn't take anything home. And so I think that, you know, experiences like that really allow for you to explore a little bit more, kind of get that touch and feel that is sometimes missing. But, you know, ModCloth in that instance, you know, I talked to her a little bit about how, you know, how does this impact your distribution strategy? And she said, you know, the beautiful thing is that we're allowing consumers to have this in-store experience, but we're keeping all of our distribution centers and capabilities as is. You know, we can kind of operate from that existing channel. So I do think that we'll start to see more integrated opportunities like that to connect with brands and retailers where, you know, you can try it on, you can go in-store, you can kind of shop in the way that consumers have done for so long, but you don't have to carry it around with you, and they don't have to, you know, figure out more advanced distribution capabilities to keep up.
And that's so interesting to me because ModCloth was originally, I mean, now I think Walmart purchased them as a brand, but ModCloth was solely an online distributor, and I always felt as a ModCloth customer like it was my little hidden secret, my little gem, you know.
Yeah.
It was like I'd whisper it to a friend, look at this site, look at all the cool things they have, you know. And it's still, they're keeping that feeling of exclusivity and selectivity for customers, which is part of their brand, and coolness, because everything that they have is just sort of like familiar yet not. Edgy, but not so far out that you feel like you're wearing a costume, you know. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So it's neat that they did that. The other place where I've seen that intersection between online space and bricks and mortar retail is now with signage.
Mm-hmm.
And this was not part of your report, but it's something that on the stories I cover for the technology and retail beat and some of the places I write for, one of the things stores are doing now is instead of having hard goods in their windows, which has been the way since probably the 1600s and maybe before that, you know, it's literally like the shop window.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't changed all that much for hundreds of years. What they're doing now is they're putting up flat screen TVs and showcasing stuff on their website desk in the windows of the store. Because if you think about it, even if they have a physical presence, it can't be open 24/7, but their website is. So why not have your website playing in the window instead of just showing, you know, an outfit that maybe they have it in your size, maybe they don't. Who the heck knows, you know? So it's really cool how all of the – we used to think – and again, we meaning, you know, again, I grew up in the age before the internet. I was an early adopter at my workplace. And by early, I mean like 1991. I was logging onto the old Prodigy as part of my work. But in the days prior to the internet and then as the internet began and so forth to where we are today in 2018 – there was always a strict distinction. You know, you always thought that there was, you know, oh, yeah, you have your online presence and your bricks and mortar. Then the two of them began to come together when consumers decided that this was silly because if I bought a pair of jeans at the Gap in the mall and then I want to buy them again online, I should see the same thing. And if I buy them online and I need to return them, why can't I just go over to the mall and return them at the Gap?
Right.
So it doesn't make sense to have to do it separately. So that all came together. Now we're seeing almost like a virtual reality where it's like the two worlds are fusing because in people's lives, they are one. We don't view our online experiences as separate. It's part of our lives. It's part of the fabric of our lives, not to pun on the clothing store images. But it is, you know, I mean, our social interactions on social media are as real to us these days as seeing friends and going out, you know, for dinner or something. You know, things like that. So it's really interesting. And for those listening, Erin, as we were coming to the conclusion of the show, maybe you could help our readers, our listeners, excuse me, find out where they can download the Walker Sands report and read it for themselves. Because again, it's really worthwhile. And I know your company for a long time as being a very reputable place to find information. So for our listeners, where can they download a copy of this report for their own use?
Yeah, thank you so much. So if you go to walkersands.com/future-of-retail, you should be able to find the report there. So, you know, I'd be happy to connect with anybody that has questions or thoughts while reading through. And, you know, thank you so much for the time on the show today. It's been really exciting to talk through some of this. You know, I think we could talk about it all day. And to your point, there's really no shortage of what has changed in this landscape. And it will certainly be interesting to see, you know, how that changes in years to come as well.
Yeah, for sure. Erin, thank you so much for joining us today. I learned a lot, and it was such a pleasure speaking with you. For our listeners, we are going to be doing a series based on some of the statistics in the Walker Sands report over on the Persimony blog. So if you haven't logged into Persimony, it's persimone.com or persimony.com. I got a weird domain there. I got a dot money, which people seem to like. I'm like, okay, great. But head on over because in the month of July, we're going to have a lot of articles about the future of retail. You know, my spin is on supporting women business owners and on supporting independent business owners. So whether you are running your little Etsy shop, selling anything handicrafted, you are a distributor for a major brand with a direct sales company, or you've got your own, you know, bricks and mortar store in a downtown area somewhere doing your own thing, do check it out because there will be lots and lots of facts and lots of insights where we can, you know, find information and find stuff for you. Erin, thank you again for joining us. I really appreciate it. And I hope our listeners tune in next week. So thank you again, Erin.
Thank you. Have a great day. It was my pleasure.
You too. Okay. Bye-bye, everybody. Take care. See y'all next week.
Bye.